I'm Anthony Rudolph. I'm a writer. I'm Paul Arago's companion and, shall I say, senior male model. I've been modelling for her for 20 years, but there are other male models as well. But I've been in many pictures and I've modelled with mannequins. I should explain, for those who don't know, that Paul Arago almost always makes series of paintings from a story. I'm avoiding the word illustration because they don't actually illustrate, as it were, page 92 of some novel. The spirit of a book will be colonized with her own feelings and compulsions and interests and pictorial concerns. But she's always triggered by, or the work is always triggered by, a story. When I came on the scene, literally and metaphorically, she was able to make a series of paintings, pastel paintings, of a Portuguese novel where the main character is a man. And previously she had mainly painted, and is known as, and wrongly said to only paint women, and mainly she did paint women. However, there was I, who wanted to be a model. She needed a model, and I wanted to be a model, so that was a win-win situation. And the novel in question was A Crime of Father Amaro, a great 19th century Portuguese novel, and I was Father Amaro. And the models, until a few years later, were virtually always human models. However, there came a point where she felt, and I can date it very precisely, when she began to use mannequins. We went to see a play by Martin Madonna at the National Theatre called The Pillow Man. Paula was blown away by the story and wanted to represent the Pillow Man in a way that a human model couldn't. I'm going to have a bit of a difficulty in explaining why. It was an instinct. She felt, if she was here, she could perhaps explain, but she felt it needed a mannequin. So she made a mannequin. And ever since then, she's used a lot of mannequins. It's quite important to explain that these mannequins are not themselves works of art. Unlike one or two in the show here, like the Chapman Brothers sculptures and the painting by Guérico, and some, they're not art in quotation marks. They are subordinate to the story. The story is always what drives Paula to make the work, but it will become her story because, of course, it has to be translated into pictorial terms. It's a translation in a sense, and then it stands in its own right. Once the picture's done, of course, because it's inanimate, the human model and the mannequin are equal, if you like. The mannequin has certain advantages. The mannequin can be made to take up poses that a human can't, and doesn't move and doesn't itch and doesn't grumble, doesn't complain. Not that the human models do, but they are human, and it's not always, it's hard work being a model. It's not as hard as being the painter. It's much easier, but it's still hard work in its mindless way. You're just keeping still. The other advantage of the model, of the mannequin, is that it extends the range of the artist. I'll give you an example. There's a picture of a naked mannequin, a female mannequin, who represents Portugal. And I, the male model, dressed in a Piero outfit, a beautiful one, I'm sucking the breast of the mannequin. Now, it would be impossible for me to do that with a living model. It wouldn't be appropriate. It is appropriate, if the painter wants it, for the human model to suck the breast of a mannequin. So these mannequins extend the range of what is subject matter, what is possible in a painting. One of the pictures I saw in the exhibition here before this interview was the picture of Millet, where this soldier, this handsome soldier, whom he selected from the Brigade of Guards or something like that, is posing with Kate Dickens, I think, the daughter of Dickens. But they couldn't pose together for reasons of propriety, even fully clothed. It wasn't possible then. So a mannequin, a lay figure, was substituted for him to pose with, and then she would pose separately. And so that was the way they got round it. In this picture, which I'm posing, called The Last Feed, the mannequin, completely naked apart from a floral hat, represents Portugal. And this figure, this not exactly sinister, the Piero figure, holding his crotch and sucking on the breast of the mannequin, is sucking, as Paula said, you know, is sucking Portugal dry. However, I mean, you don't have to know that to enjoy or to make something of the picture. But it's a bonus sometimes to know the backstory. That the mannequin, even though one or two have been bought, they're not really strictly works of art. The proof is that Paula sometimes puts on a new face on the body. They get reused with different clothes. You know, they are strictly a means to an end. They are utilitarian. They're subordinate, as the human model is. They're subordinate to the drive of the storytelling, because the artist here is a storyteller. So they are subordinate and utilitarian and quite ordinary in some respects. There's a proof of that is that a sculptor made Paula, gave her a gift of perhaps it was a pig, I'm not sure, to use in a picture. And Paula found she couldn't use it in the picture because it was already a kind of perfected, well, you have the phrase in the exhibition, mannequin perfectionné. It was a work of art in its own right. This was a sculptress who exhibits, but it wasn't appropriate to use in the picture. The mannequins in Paula Rego's work are firmly in their place as, well, they're props. They're essential. There's a wonderful portrait by Paula of Sir David Hare, the playwright, where she has David posing with a lamb that Paula made. And the lamb, some of the emotions, David Hare's a very emotional man, a complex, and his plays witness this in a complexity. And Paula needed the lamb to take some of the excess emotion from David Hare. She felt it would be too much to put it all in him. I think she tried and it didn't work. So she hit on the idea of having this lamb who's a kind of, not exactly a guardian angel, but who's posing alongside David. And now the lamb and the hare, ha-ha, are forever inanimate in the National Portrait Gallery. But inanimate because it's two-dimensional, but animated, reanimated by the spirit and genius of the artist. So you go; it goes from inanimate mannequin and totally still human model in their three-dimensional glory to inanimate object, which is the painting in the dark when the museum is closed. It's just this pastel painting. And then when we look at it, we're astonished. It's come to life. Reanimated. The relationship between the model, the mannequin, and the human model is, well, it's not a lot of fun posing for hours on end, sucking the papier-mâché and other fabrics wrapped in a kind of tights or a stocking or something, which people have used always for that kind of fabric. 19th century ones. It's not sexy. It's not in any sense of the word. It's you're just keeping still, holding the pose, a pose which could only be a human and a mannequin. It perhaps could have been two mannequins, but that wouldn't be so interesting. The painter knew very well what she wanted to do. Whether she would achieve it is another matter. It's very hard work getting it right. But the painter needed the possibilities created by a combination of a human model and the mannequin. The question of the mannequin representing Portugal, it's kind of almost a parody of monumental sculpture, where normally Portugal or England or France as Marianne, all the national emblems are grand, even grandiose sculptures, whereas this poor woman is a rag doll, really, a kind of humble mannequin, but who stands in for Portugal, which is getting a raw deal in terms of the politicians whom I think she's having a swipe at. Unlike the mannequin, the human model might say, I need to go to the loo, or I'm thirsty, or I'm tired. Are we going to have a break soon? Now, for those of us who sit for her as her intimates, such as myself, are able to kind of talk to her. If you've sat for somebody long enough, you know when it's an appropriate moment to speak, and when she's seriously concentrating on a difficult thing like a foot or a hand. Of course, practically everything is difficult in this picture, but there are pictures where there's some background, which is easier to do. This leads to another question, which is the question of energy. There is a sense in which I think painters draw energy from the model, probably not from the mannequin, but from the human model. I don't know if it can be proved. It's a sort of psychic phenomenon. And I do know that after one has been posing, one is exhausted. It's very tiring. It's not as tiring as being the painter, making the work. All you have to do is keep still for an hour, and then you have a brief break, and then another hour, or however many hours you're doing it that day. Keeping still is not natural. And you may be in a pose which looks natural once it's been painted, but it's not natural to hold it for all that time, like a frozen mime. I fantasize that one is an actor, and I kind of joke or pretend that it's method acting. And I read the book or the story the picture might have been triggered by, and I try and get into the character. But that's really a literary, writerly fantasy. Fact is, you take up the pose. The question arises of the collaboration with the artist. And then the question of the pose, unlike the mannequin, the human model, there are certain poses you can't do, and certainly not to hold for a long period of time. There's a negotiation with the artist, and she may not know at first what pose is required for the purposes of the story. And then, so you practice, you try different poses, like I suppose in theatre as well, people, where do you stand? What gestures do you make? You try a few things out, and then the artist will say, that's it, that's good, that's what I want. Can you hold that? She knows what is the realm of the possible. So this one was not so difficult to hold, because I have my arm round the mannequin, so I've got a support there, and one foot was higher than the other, which I think was easier to hold. My foot is on the plinth with the feet of the mannequin. My relationship with the mannequin is probably irrelevant to the painter, so long as it's inside my head. But I might be thinking about the mannequin, and I might have an idea for a story. But that will be yet another turn of the screw, another turn of the wheel. But it has precious little to do with the picture that's going to be created. But of course, some artists, Bellmare and others, use mannequins to make, if you like, postmodern statements about the nature of story, whereas I think Paula, in one sense, is more traditional. She's not postmodern. She's high modern, but she's not postmodern. I think postmodernists would be very interested in what Paula Rego is doing in her pictures when there's a mannequin and a human being. But for her, I think I can safely say that that is not in the front of her mind. I don't think it's necessarily in her mind at all. What's in her mind is to convey, as best she can, a story. It's the people. It's storytelling. The profound human feelings that her characters incarnate.